This show was previously broadcast live on ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com.
Hello and welcome back, everyone, to A Better World with your host, Mitchell J. Rabin. And I'm very glad you're joining us again today for what I feel will be a really interesting show. We'll have joining us in a little bit a gentleman I've had on the show before, a good friend and colleague, David Katzmeier from the Foundation for the Study of Cycles. Why do things happen the way they do in our world, huh? How come they happen this way? How about our solar system? How about our country? Well, there are reasons for these things, and that's going to be the subject of today's show, to look at how naturally occurring cycles that have always been here, sort of the way the moon and the sun dance, the way equinoxes occur, the way solstices happen. There is a cycle to everything. And the study of them has been taken up by some very top-notch scientists, as well as economists and social thinkers. And they have examined the way these work and interact with our society and seem to set the tone, if you will, for what's happening now and this is its predictive function, what may be happening next, the probability of which, well, according to decades upon decades of research, show it's very good. It's a high likelihood. So that's why when we look at some of the events before us, for instance, what's happening economically, what's happening politically, we can get another vantage point of understanding. It's great to be in the thick of it, where we are taking action from an awakened point of view on what is going on and doing what we can to make a difference in the world. That is of great importance. When we stand back, we step back and take a look at the way the entire operation occurs, we can get another point of leverage from this vantage point. And that's what today's show is going to be about. Rather than just entering the thick of it, which of course is where the action is, we're going to be sort of stepping out of the ball game for a moment for some coaching on the side to take a look at why things happen the way they are and how we can then be in accord with them, sort of like the flowing Tao instead of against. But before we launch into that, but also related to that, I just want to say thank you for the indulgence over the last couple of weeks. I've been out of town. I've been in Austin, Texas, Phoenix, Arizona, Scottsdale, and Sedona, primarily at a writer's retreat. And my, oh my, this was far from a vacation. I was with Tom Bird and his cronies, and we were sitting down essentially from 8 to 5 daily, writing, editing, revising, thinking, creating, etc., with periodic breaks, of course, some time for laughter, stretching, eating, basking in the sun. But by and large, we had our nose to the veritable grindstone, so to speak. The one day I had off, oh God, was just extraordinary. And I just want to share with you a little bit before we launch into our dialogue with David Katzmeier, because It was very informative and very expanding for me, and I want to share some of that with all of you. I did an interview for the TV show with a very lovely special astrologer named Cal Garrison, the author of The Astrology of 2012 and Beyond. She is, for those of you who would recognize this name, the astrologer and colleague of Junvalo Melchizedek. Very unusual name and very unusual person who has been acting as an intermediary between indigenous peoples, largely the Mayan elders, also Hopi and others, and Americans and people, I should really say, at large. Junvalo had just been running a 5-day intensive during the same time that I was out there in Sedona called something like Opening the Heart. And people had flown in from Tokyo and other far parts of the world to attend this and to hear what he had to say about what are referred to commonly as the end times. What a fascinating subject, the end, or should we call them the beginning, the longed-for beginning times? Well, therein lies the rub, of course, because what we see in the end is really a new beginning. And there is a lot of talk these days, and increasingly, about 2012. We had a Mayan calendar expert, biologist, Swedish biologist, Carl Kalman, on not long ago, talking about 2012 not even being the correct number according to the Mayan calendar, but instead October 28th, 2011, as the end date. Now, let's just take a step back and say, what do you mean a calendar with an end date? What a funny phenomenon. Well, yeah, there is a calendar with an end date. So what does that mean? Are we stepping off a cliff? What gives? Well, what it really is not an end as we think of an end at all, unless we have the more, let's say, enlightened view of an end always having the seeds of a new beginning, sort of like in the ashes of Phoenix. And indeed, that's really what all of the indigenous teachings speak of, that we have ground ourselves into the ground so far with the way we have disrespected Mother Earth, each other, all sentient life, the way we have not respected the life force herself. And as a result of our plundering, pillaging, raping, profiteering on anything possible to such a far extent, because we have exploited the Earth, we have drilled holes in her body to pull out this raw, crude oil and send it around the world into gas stations and then into inefficient automobiles and trucks and what have you. The whole thing is madness. It's really, if you really take a look at it, not even for too long, you could see it as nothing other but pathology. We are being called to task, my friends, that simply. Called to task by Mother Earth herself, the supreme intelligence before us. But we don't think of her like that. We think of Mother Earth essentially as Earth, as a planet, as a big, big rock hurling through space without a life of her own. So ironic, because of course it is she that has given us life. Oh, sure, we came through the loins of our biological mother. But she's on the micro level. The macro level, well, isn't even Earth, quite honestly. It goes back before that. But on the next stage of the game is Earth. And we do not hold her as such. And as a result, we have really done such disservice to her, which also means ourselves. We are but a small little parasite on her back. And she is beginning to remind us of that yet again. And the study of cycles is really very fascinating because it shows us in what time frames she reacts to our bothering her. It's actually not just that. It's the way we ebb and flow, sort of like the tides do, just as a woman does according to the moon, the ebb and flow of our hearts, our minds, and our behaviors occurs in cycles such as the 26,000-year cycle, a 13,000-year cycle, and on down all the way to, really, a cycle of a minute. But there are correspondences with these. And I'm sharing with you a moment about my experiences out in Sedona, largely having to do with the meeting of two key people, I feel. Cal Garrison, who, as I said, I did interview for the TV show. That'll be aired. Well, I'll announce it. It'll be in the newsletter. If you don't get that, oh my, you really should. Go to www.abetterworld.net, abetterworld.net, and sign up for the newsletter. And I also spent time with a Mohawk elder from the Iroquois Nation, Medicine Wolf, who, God, has got to be in his early 80s. He has been a health renegade. He is a nutritionist. He's a biophysicist. He is using monoatomic elements in his nutrients, and very powerful stuff. Amazing, beautiful, wise, sage of a native man. And I had the great blessing of spending time with him and Cal on my last day in Sedona. It was actually opening up a whole other world out there. But for good reasons, I had to come back here. And all of that will be continued, including with Drunvalo, upon my return. And the idea I want to convey here is I want to invite everyone to really recognize that the world is just not as it appears. If we could step outside of the box, so to speak, and an exercise I like doing with clients is shoot ourselves to the moon and look down, take a peek at this beautiful planet and see what role it is we are here to play, what difference it is we can make in the way the world goes, the way our fellow humans, brothers and sisters, interact with each other and with the planet herself, how we can come to understanding our own source, our own inner life, our own inner self, going into our center, our Dantian, the elixir field, the laboratory where all things happen, the energies of our life gather and stream through our nervous system and every other system so that we can breathe and eat and laugh and smile and enjoy. You know, how often do we actually step outside of our box, our bodies, and our Earth herself, and take a look from beyond and get a sense of how fortunate we really are just to have the gift of life itself and to do the wondrous things that we are capable of doing due to our creative imaginations, our hearts that speak to us, filled as they are with 30-some-odd thousand neurons thinking on its own, the heart-mind, and bodies that are built to move. And I just want to say it's a blessing, and to step outside and look in, to empty ourselves for a moment and take a look, peer in to our own selves and into our own creation on this planet, and see how we can be responsible stewards of life here, instead of just what's in it for me kind of thing. And take yourself into consideration, don't get me wrong, but what we're looking for, of course, is balance between all of the elements. And this is something that Medicine Wolf and I spoke about at length, and Cal and I spoke about it from an astrological point of view, as well as from the point of view of the elders speaking about this time on our planet, unlike any other time that we know of, except in as far as, again, we're experiencing the summation of cycles that are coming through at this time. Can you imagine being alive at the time when a 26,000-year cycle is completing? Now, we don't know the minute or the hour or even exactly the year, but life doesn't happen quite like that. Nothing operates fully like a Swiss train pulling into the station. But we are here, folks, and the more attention we can pay closely to understanding cycles, I think we'll be all the richer. And on that note, I'd like to bring on my guest to speak to us further about cycles from the Foundation of the Study of Cycles, which is going to be hosting a conference very soon, November 12th through 16th, in Albuquerque, New Mexico. And oh my, if you can be there, I'll be there. I'll be one of the speakers. And I think it'll be something very exciting and very informative for a lot of people. Dave Katzmeier, are you on the line?
How you do?
How are you?
Okay.
Excellent. Good to have you. Well, you heard some of the introduction, I hope.
I did.
And so I'd love to hear from you. What would people be experiencing when they go to your website, David, on the Foundation of the Study of Cycles? What kind of information will they encounter?
We have many websites, and our main website at cycles.cc is a directory to the various websites that our viewers can visit. The main thing that we present to them is the culmination of archives of our work that has been going on since we were founded in 1941. We're presenting not only an economic analysis and technical analysis of the market in detail with forecasts, but we're also looking at various other things that have been pioneered by our founders and carried on since, including sunspot cycles, cycles in weather, and cycles in social change, and even cycles in the populations of various animals, which had something to do with our beginnings, believe it or not.
Yes.
And Cycles Magazine, and Cycles Projections and Economics and so forth.
So what is the basis of the Foundation's particular study of cycles? Because, of course, cycles have been studied for a long time. You have a unique way, as you do personally, David. I mentioned to people at the beginning of the show that we had you on as a guest talking about calorhythms, which is your own unique form of cycle study. How is it that what goes on at the Foundation differs from that?
Well, they really dovetail together, and we're integrating my study of my own personal discovery of calorhythms into the Foundation for the Study of Cycles, and there's more linking and merging of the respective websites.
Mm-hmm.
Historically, a lot of the funding that we've received has been for economic research. You can understand somebody that has the money to fund is interested in making money.
Yes.
And so a lot of that has gone into, we've developed our own software called TechSignal, and that's one of the sites that you can click to from cycles.cc,
mm-hmm.
where we can analyze market data and through our own system of logarithms and make projections. And we've just signed a deal with Weiss Marketing Group, as a matter of fact. They have exclusive rights to distribute some of the information that is being produced with our own analysis and software, and this distributed through them through what's called the Foundation Alliance. But
how would you describe, David, the reasoning behind or the principle behind the Foundation study of cycles? What's the nugget there?
It's really, it was studying the interdisciplinary analysis of cycles, meaning that our founder, Edward R. Dewey, was the chief economic advisor during the Hoover administration. And he was assigned a task of trying to find out what caused the Great Depression.
Mm-hmm.
So he and a team of other leading economists got together, were studying this, went through the data, and they were not looking for cycles. It turns out that he went to a Matamec conference in Canada around that time, and listened in on some of the things that they were studying there. And
what kind of conference? What was that conference again?
It was called Matamec in Matamec, Canada.
Okay.
And at that conference, leading biologists came in and were talking about the populations of lemmings and snowshoe rabbits. And what they found is, to Dewey's amazement, not only were they discussing the very cycles of the same duration he had found in analyzing the market, but they peaked and they bottomed at the same time. Now he realized that the source of all cycles is exogenous. While they may be manifesting in the things that we analyze so closely and so technically, they're not internal rhythms necessarily. We can see more than one thing, seemingly unrelated, being influenced by the same outside force, moving to the same durations, and peaking and troughing at the same time.
Wait a minute. Are you saying that we can look at our economic behavior and just look to lemmings to understand the way it's going?
No, but you're going to find that the population peaks and troughs in such things as lemming and snowshoe rabbits is one of the cycles that will
appear. It's all beginning to make sense to me now.
Yes. Well, it's all one. We're moving away from the 20th century scientific way of just categorizing and compartmentalizing everything and giving them labels and saying that if you know something by its right name, it's the beginning of wisdom. Well, fine. Well, let's go a little bit beyond that and realize that there's an interconnectedness to everything.
Very true.
Absolutely.
Okay. So, but no, what inference can we make from the lemmings? And I think this is great. And snowshoe rabbits. I love it.
That we are moving collectively. Yes, we are a nation of rugged individuals, but we are moving with a herd mentality, as it were.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a group consciousness, not only in your bridge club or your motorcycle gang, but in your your community, in your nation, and all of the nations moving together in the moving trends of world civilization.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well-made point. I agree with you completely. But what was it found that you could follow one particular species to get the best economic forecasting for the New York Stock Exchange?
Well, we're not saying that necessarily just follow the
I think
species.
If you followed rat behavior, you'd get a little closer.
Yes, indeed. And if you're looking in the rat race, you may find some parallels. But there's, for instance, a 9.6-year population rise and fall in many species that's documented on our sites. We just recently posted a cycles reference chart that you can link to from our sites that show more than 4,000 separate cycles that have been discovered by the foundation that we're making available to the public. And likewise,
fabulous.
There has long been a 9.6-year cycle that we can find in the fluctuation of stock prices.
9.6-year. Oh, I see.
Yeah.
So how effective has the predictive cycles that you have detailed shown to be?
They have proved consistent because we analyze on many different levels in terms of short-term ripples and long-term waves.
Mm-hmm.
And what we find is there's often a confluence of cycles influencing a particular field, whether you're following exchange transfer funds or stock prices or what have you, or commodities. The best analysis that you can do is to look at the smaller cycles in the context of dominant cycles and put them together.
Mm-hmm.
And when you do that, you're going to be able to make a forecast and compare it with your performance to date.
Fabulous. So just so I and the audience understand, Dewey, in studying the Great Depression on behalf of the Hoover administration, attended a conference in Canada.
Yeah.
And he was not studying or looking for cycles at all, but found that some of the other presenters there were. And they were looking specifically at cycles, like behavioral cycles, life and death cycles, eating, feeding, mating cycles of the snowshoe rabbit and lemmings. And through so doing it, he had the realization that our human behavior, economic, social, etc., is really governed similarly by such cycles.
That is true.
That's fabulous. And so is there a particular animal group, though, that you found would be most worthy to study to see and chart human behavior? I know I offered one possibility, but maybe there are others.
It's more like one particular cycle that you can find in various animal groups, whether it's the population of fish. I hear fishermen complaining that their fishing is off 1 year, and then they seek to attribute it, well, maybe there was too much fishing going on. Maybe there was pollution in the water, which there is.
Yes.
But lo and behold, some years later, they wind up having a bountiful year and often don't attribute cycles of population growth to that. So it's not so much look at the one species, it's look at the one or more few cycles that influence various species, because those may be the very cycles that are influencing our market today.
Yes. Yes. Excellent. Let me inform everyone that we're speaking with David Katzmeier, currently out in Albuquerque, New Mexico, working with the Foundation for the Study of Cycles. And David is an accomplished cyclist, you could say. Really, I would say researcher and scholar in the field of cycles, having developed his own really powerful and profound work called Calorhythms, which I've had the ample opportunity to know of for God Almighty since the early 90s, quite honestly. And David's done an impressive amount of work on detailing these from the points of view of social, economic, body, emotional cycles that we in the United States pass through, as well as it can be seen from other vantage points. And we should also let them know, David, that there is a conference coming up very soon, in a few weeks, really, out in Albuquerque.
Sir.
Would you just tell our audience about that?
Yes. We're holding a summit each year for the next 4 years regarding the confluence of cycles of prophecy and prediction and our analysis regarding 2012. Our first one is being held this November 12 through 16 here in Albuquerque, New Mexico. And what we'll be taking a look at is the prophecies across time from Nostradamus, from the Hopi prophecies, to other measures of time that we find from the Mayan calendar and from various sources, to present the prophecies, the prediction, and to put them against a reality test through the scientific analysis of cycles.
Fabulous.
Now,
who are some of the guests that you'll be speakers that will be there?
All right. Well, on the opening speakers will be the director of the Foundation of the Study of Cycles itself, David Perales.
In fact, and let me just interject here for those of you who, the 12th,
and I will speak as well.
Excellent. I just want to say, for those of you who receive our newsletter, it stated that David Perales was going to be our guest today, but due to extenuating circumstances, he couldn't join us, and David just quickly and kindly stepped in for him. So thank you, David.
Then, following that, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday are three full days of speakers following a brief day on Monday. Opening our full days of speakers is author Carl Coleman, who is from Sweden, has written many books regarding the Mayan calendar. They're sold all over the world. He's going to be our guest for some 2 hours. Opening up, we feel it's appropriate to begin with the Mayan calendar, because the focus of our attention is December 2012.
Indeed.
Of course, the long count of the Mayan calendar ends at that date. Yourself will be a speaker, invited by the president of the foundation himself. And so you are going to be addressing these issues because of your broad-based, far-reaching experience with so many people who have studies in this area.
Yes.
So we'll be welcoming you on that. Attentively.
Yes.
Jake Bernstein, leading economist from California, who publishes his newsletter and has been doing analysis for many years and has been a member of the foundation since the 1970s is due to make a presentation.
Excellent.
That's tentative because he's got a serious illness in the family. He may have to sign in via webinar, but he's tentatively scheduled. Also, Ray Toombs is coming in from New Zealand, who's the head of the Cycles Research Institute and has been affiliated with the foundation for many years. He's going to be talking about cycle synchronies and the interdisciplinary study of cycles, which merely means how we're finding the same cycles in many different areas of the world that might be seemingly unrelated, yet moving to the same heartbeat.
Yes, yes.
Our former director and current research director, Richard Mogi, will be talking about the market and economic cycles.
Excellent.
He has been involved with the foundation for many, many years and is also the one who developed our Tech Signal software. He took an original bit of software for cycles analysis that was presented by the foundation and refined it through extensive programming into what it is today.
You brought him up to the show just last year sometime.
He has done presentations. He was on your show and Progressive Radio Network.
And we just re-aired it last week, actually.
And which was rebroadcast recently.
Yep.
A great show that was, too.
Yeah.
And is still in the archives for
yes.
people to hear. Our own chief scientist, Dr. Niels K. Windsor, is going to be speaking about solar flares and near-Earth objects, which orbit in the solar system in cyclical patterns, and there's a lot more up there than most people realize.
Yes.
And solar flares are of significance to this conference because of the peak that is due for solar flares in, of all times, December 2012.
Yes.
While many scientists are saying that it is going to be the biggest peak we've seen in half a century, the famous Michio Kaku has got a significant video. I invite you to go to YouTube and look
yes.
for that on solar flares, because he says that the other scientists have underestimated the size of these solar flares by 10 to 20 times, and he supports that it is due to peak in December of 2012. Now, that can knock out communications, and in the 1850s, a significant solar peak was so severe that it knocked out telegraph communications. And where the wires were on the ground or touching leaves, the leaves caught on fire because of the charge that traveled through the lines.
Incredible.
So Michio Kaku's warning to us is something we're taking seriously.
In fact, we ought to see if we can get hold of Michio Kaku for the conference.
Yes, indeed. And if not this one, then for the subsequent one that is coming next year.
He's on Progressive Radio Network as well as WBAI.
So. Yes, he is.
Yeah.
Yes, he is.
Mm-hmm.
And
Don Beck will be one of the speakers as well of Spiral Dynamics, who we had on A Better World TV. We just aired it, actually, all of about a month and a half ago. And Don is a
yes,
professor
indeed.
Of
and we're also bringing in
Spiral Dynamics,
people
actually.
From the world of the Hopi and visitors of the people of the Mayapan. John Kimmy will be coming and talking about Hopi prophecies. Now, John Kimmy has spent some 40 years with the Hopi on the Third Mesa. And now I want to add something here. Having a guest speaking about Hopi prophecies is something that must be done with great respect because there is not uniform agreement, I understand,
right.
as to whether this is the time to bring these prophecies forth or whether they should be brought forth. However, there are elders who are saying, bring this knowledge forth. John Kimmy is authorized to do that by the elders themselves.
Wow.
And John Kimmy's message to us is that all of the Hopi prophecies have already come true. And that means that,
indeed.
According to the prophecies, we are due to move now from what is called the fourth world into the fifth world. So, also along those lines, Mr. Joel Collin is coming down from Illinois to speak with us. He has also spent some 30-plus years on a second Mesa because his father, who adopted him, is one of the Hopi elders. So he was raised with the prophecies, and he's coming down to speak, but also his life study has been Mother Earth cycles. So he's speaking about the prophecy in context with the Mother Earth cycles and the celestial cycles. And his message that I have gotten in my conversations with him so far is that the Hopi prophecies are foretelling that this to be the time because of where we are, basically in the precession of the equinox, and where we are in the celestial cycles. Mm. Now, I don't want to go in any more than that until Mr. Cohen does his speak. Mind you, I want to be respectful to the Hopis and to their prophecies and let the true messengers carry the message correctly. So they're going to have the opportunity to do that.
Yes.
And also, one more speaker I want to mention is Eduardo Griego, who has spent many years in the Yucatan Peninsula with the people of the Mayapan, who are the carriers of the Mayan teachings. He partook in the fire ceremonies and the learning and was given this directly by the people who are carrying it themselves. He's bringing a beautiful PowerPoint, Flashpoint presentation because he's also technically gifted. He's going to just show you the basics, how the Mayan calendar works, what is the Mayan calendar system, and why do we say it's ending in 2012. He believes that this is the dawn of an era of social change to us, and that's being told, its timing's being told by the Mayan calendar.
Mm.
So all of these things together, you know, from... and also Nostradamus. Richard Mogi is one of the leading authorities on Nostradamus. He co-wrote and edited Nostradamus, Key to the Future, which was published in 1981. And he translated directly from the French because he's fluent in French. So we're taking a look at all of these things from traditional sciences to the prophecies to the predictions and putting them together. It's a cycle synchronies in itself. It's like the Madame X conference of 1929.
David, it sounds fabulous. You have gotten me completely excited about being there. Truly. This last couple of weeks that you know I've been in Sedona, I've had the opportunity to spend a fair amount of time with people who helped to arrange an Indigenous Peoples Conference in Sedona that occurred, I think it was this past June, and elders from all over the Americas gathered there for what was a prophesied gathering. And interestingly, the Hopi were not there. That was part of the prophecy as well. And I have been steeped for the past couple of weeks in the field, you could say, in the quantum field of prophecy, Indigenous in particular, and the wisdom therein, and how we as white Anglos have come over and assumed that we knew more about planet Earth and more about the nature of reality than those people who we basically thought of as primitive knew. And it's very interesting, the cycle, that is, that we're going through in recognizing that perhaps they knew something that we did not. And based on your excellent description of this conference, it could well be that some of that knowledge and wisdom rise to the surface.
Well, many of the people living in America today are the descendants of those who claim to have a manifest destiny across the new world on a dead object planet on which we live to give it life, moving through Newtonian mechanics in the solar system. Well, all of that is changing.
Exactly.
You know, we're finding out that we are all one, that all things change, things move in rhythm. We find out that there is not absolute points, and there's more of a quantum physics than the Newtonian Cartesian models of thinking and motion. And so it is that we have to consider ourselves in this world and part of it. And we're finding that the rhythms within us and without us are something that we can discover. I mean, who would sail from New York to London in a straight line? A sailor that knows to move with the currents of the ocean and the trade winds is going to get there faster and not fight against the currents. Yet we tend to do that in our own machine age society And we're getting away from that now, and we're starting to find out that the humanistic values can be found within us so that we can manifest them around us. To do that, we must live in a world of cycles.
Exactly, exactly. Well put. And in fact, I'm reminded, David, of the time when we first met at the Open Center on Spring Street during a workshop by Terence McKenna, penseur extraordinaire of the 20th century, who wrote many books from The Invisible Landscape to Food of the Gods and more, and had his own time wave zero theory. And you presented calorithms to him. And I remember one of the points that he made during this workshop, and he used the phrase, the topography of time. And I had never heard that before. But in fact, it highlights how virtually all of anything we refer to as a scientific experiment, which was using the Newtonian-style linear thinking you were just describing, does not ever account for the changing wave-like nature and phases of the sun, the moon, the stars, the weather, and how these are impacting. Well, not so much weather. That's more considered a variable. But to conduct an experiment on a Monday at 9 a.m. is very different than conducting an experiment on Wednesday afternoon at 5.
Indeed.
And scientists who pride themselves on being so rigorously scientific do not take this incredibly important, very obvious fact into consideration.
And this is not new per se. It's just new in the last half millennium. If you go back into the ancient Sanskrit writings and look at the kalpa or the rhythms there.
Yes,
and,
the yugas.
And even one of the 108 names of Shiva is Mahakala, which means transcendent time, and Kala means relative time and all the cycles within it.
Yes.
These have been detailed in ancient Hindu writings. The Buddhists speak of ciphers, which are cycles of immense years. The life of Brahma is like 432 million or billion years and so forth, and he opens his eyes and the universe begins. He blinks and it ends,
yes,
and so forth. And this has been known for many years, has been carried by the Native Americans through to today. And so to some societies, which have brought many wonderful things, are studying these ancient things as if they were new. Well, Fritjof Capra wrote a great book in the 1970s,
yes,
called The Tao of Physics, where he looked at how what he studied as a nuclear physicist was basically writing mathematical formulas and looking at the physical manifestations of all creation was a parallel to what the ancient mystics saw about the universe.
Exactly.
And when you read his book, on one left-hand page, you'll see a writings of the mystics. On the right-hand page, you'll see the mathematical formulas translated, and at the bottom, translate them both into common English, and they're saying the same thing.
Exactly. So you made a comment before that we are discovering that we're all one in the interconnectedness of all things. But with that, of course, based on what you're saying and what we really do know, that's not really true. We have known that we are one. We have known about the interconnectedness of all things through, one, our own personal observation and experience, as well as what the ancients have been saying in the forms of poetry, such as Lao Tzu or the Upanishads, or ancient Jewish, Tibetan, and Native indigenous peoples' writings and oral traditions as well.
And that's why we're having the conference, because just as Joseph Campbell said, of all religions, there's only one myth being told with different names in different languages around the world. There is only one world of cycles and all of the sub-cycles within it. And so when we discover how this is transcendent through all of our lives and how seemingly unrelated events are moving to the same drumbeat, then we can understand how to do anything we choose to do more effectively.
Exactly, exactly. Well put. And this is so important for us to recognize, I think, that the wisdom that has been with us all along is being rediscovered and re-respected, and I think that's a big part. There is an egoic nature, an anthropocentric nature to man, and he, with great impunity, tends to think that his way is the best way and does not look outside of his own box, sort of like what I was saying at the very beginning of the show. And as such, is looking always at the world through his own lens, his own filters, and not recognizing or hearing the voice of the elders, whoever they may be, and listen with a finer ear to get the messages that have always been here, which is to treat each other cooperatively and with respect, if not with love and reverence, and Mother Earth herself as well. And had we abided by these basics, we might not have seen the kind of, in the Hopi prophecy, life can go either of two fundamental ways. We can be in accordance with the Tao, to mix a metaphor. We could be in accordance with Mother Nature, or we can be against her. To be against her is to be against each other simultaneously. It's not
well
separate.
Well said that.
You know?
That's exactly right.
And it is coming back to haunt us. We came to these shores as essentially hungry for religious freedom, ironically, and some debtors, and then squelched the religious freedom of the inhabitants of this land. And I feel that, in a sense, we are soon to be paying that price. As you also said before, David, I'm very excited about the gentleman you referred to who will be speaking about the Hopi prophecy. There was always the opportunity to make the right choice, but continually, as a collective, we have not. And we have not listened to the wisdom of the elders, of the people who originally inhabited this land. And now it's coming home to roost.
Well, I believe that moves in cycles as well. There's a time of light, a time of darkness. There's a time in which the strong will lead, a time in which the spirited will lead, and a time in which the smart will lead.
Mm-hmm.
And in the revolving spotlight of time, every dog has its day, to use an expression.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Where I believe we're going now in the cycles of the world is people are listening now.
Yes.
We're ready for a change, not just for a change in short-term national changes, but in terms of where we're going in the world and in civilization, what some of the prophecies are telling us, that this may be a change that is greater than something that we see in centuries of moving eras of civilization, but maybe something of thousands or tens of thousands of years culminating now.
Yes, exactly. So, what cycles, from your point of view, do you see culminating now?
In my own work of collar rhythms, I follow cycles of national trends as well as greater cycles of world change. These take hundreds of years to change. What I see now, just very briefly, giving you some conclusions rather than going into the details of
yes.
each cycle and its duration, is the machine age is over. And the industrial heyday, the clamor and the din of that which has taken place for the last 200 years, at the expense of some other things,
yes.
is fading into an era of cleanup and reform.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, what I call the emotional and the intellectual cycles of the world are simultaneously breaking up into the high half right now. To do that, they have to go through a brief period of transition and change, which interestingly enough lasts from 2000 to 2012, according to my theory,
mm-hmm.
where we go through rapid shakeup, rapid change as birth pangs to a new era. And that's what I want to remind people. If you see the collapse of the economy in Iceland, or you're concerned about our future, or you see
the collapse of the banking system on Wall Street?
Exactly.
We don't have to go to Iceland.
All part of the process. It's all necessary. You have to shake up and change what's there in order to bring in anew. So it's not just castles crumbling, which much of this appears to be. It is the birth pangs of a new era.
Yes.
We're going to care more, and we're going to have a new age of reason. That's my own personal belief of cycles.
Yes, indeed. On the more local micro level, according to either the foundation study of cycles or calorhythms, over the next 3 months, what is it that you see economically for our country?
Well, we have some forecasts regarding the Dow, for instance. We do believe there's going to be a little bit of a dip before the end of the year and another bottom in March. But that doesn't mean the end of the economic system. That's just short-term analysis of some of the major leading indicators.
Mm-hmm.
But to find out more about this, I invite people to go to cycles.cc and look for what we have for what we call Tech Signal, and to learn more about the Foundation Alliance, where we are distributing our predictive analysis in various fields that you can see detail, even translated into buy and sell signals.
Excellent.
And so that's where you can find out more. And speaking of finding out more, the Foundation for the Study of Cycles is offering a special discount for the November summit coming up, exclusive for A Better World listeners. It will be posted on your site later today. The information was just sent to your IT department this morning.
Oh, I like the sound of that, David. My A Better World's IT department, yes.
That's
Josh.
Right. and it's a good
Josh Rosario.
The website looks very good, and the way that you have been bringing your DVDs and even DVDs from the classic collection going back many years is a wonderful gift to the world, because there's a wealth of knowledge contained in these DVDs, and the list of people that you've had on your show was just too much to go into right
yes.
now. I hope people find out more about that. And so your IT people will be posting today a special link where we are offering a 61% discount on the cost of attending the conference, and we're providing hotel accommodations included in the price.
My God.
So people today, go to abetterworld.net, where you'll see this afternoon there will be a link that appears only on abetterworld.net.
Under events.
To a special page built for no one else, where that discount can be achieved. You cut and paste a coupon code when you check out, and it's all explained on the page. And that's where you can get the huge savings.
That's great. David, thank you so much for being a guest on the show again. It's always
yes,
a pleasure. I so appreciate your intelligence, your observations, and what you have to share.
Yes, indeed. Thank you.
Absolutely. That is David Katzmeier from the Foundation of the Study of Cycles. I'm always so glad to have David on, because he brings a level of intelligence and intellect to the foreground that I so appreciate. Anyway, I am really excited about going to this conference. Yes, I will be a speaker, and I am thrilled. I didn't really know the full lineup. I know a couple of the folks that I recommended that they quickly engaged, such as Carl Kalaman, a good friend, and Don Beck of Spiral Dynamics, who has been lauded and supported greatly by the work of Ken Wilber and the Integral community. So this is powerful stuff, and it's pivotal at this point in time, folks, for us all to learn more about these fundamental natural cycles, which on many levels govern our thoughts, our feelings, our behavior, and we don't even know it. And so this is an opportunity to bring this to consciousness, to bring it out, so we're not keeping it all subterranean, so to speak. Of course, we have our own personal cycles and psychologies which relate to our own prenatal and early childhood development. But there are other cycles at play as well on a species-wide planetary level. And we are subject to those. And human will does intercede. It's a conversation David and I always have. And so it can be overruled to some extent, but not fully. So if you are interested in attending, just go to www.abetterworld.net. If you're not part of the newsletter, please join us. And I'm so glad that you have come to join us today for A Better World. You know that I seek to bring us the sung and the unsung heroes of society, those people on the grassroots level who are making a difference in the domains of health, wellness, consciousness, environment. And on that note, I'm so glad that you are part of our community here. This is Mitchell J. Rabin for A Better World. Also tune into our weekly TV show every Tuesday night at 10:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And I look forward to seeing you all next week.